On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
What are you doing here? What are you doing here? Look at you. Look at you clicking on the show. Look at the big boy you are clicking on a show. That's fantastic. Congratulations. Wow. I didn't know you could click. What a... You're out of your way to click on something. Whoa, that's pretty cool. And those of you that are listening to the show on a terrestrial radio station, that's like a radio station from another planet. I don't know. Whatever. You know, whatever. I so much don't care. Well, welcome to the show. I'm Ron Van Dam. This is the Ron Van Dam Show. I think we care about too much. I really do. I think we overcare. Yeah, it's horrible that horrible things are happening to people all over the planet every moment. But do I need to hear about every single one of them? When I'm watching the news, I find out that some couple in Hawaii lost their wallet, their keys, lost their purse on a cruise ship. And why do I have to know that? Why do I need to know that? I'm just overburdened. I'm overburdened with everybody's problems. People that I don't even know. People on Facebook. Man, people are in horrible, horrible situations. They're crowdfunding me. You're crowding me with your funding. I don't even know you. I feel so bad that you lost your wedding ring. Somehow you got married and then you went to the beach and it got in the sand and you had everybody looking for the ring. That doesn't need to be a news story at the end of a news program. I don't care. I don't care. Oh my God, there was a beached whale on Cape Cod and they had the oceanographers come out to try to get to save the whales. I'm sorry, I don't care. I feel so bad for the whale. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Is it my responsibility to save the whales? My closet is full of them in my house. I can't save another whale. I have no more room in my house for whales. It's unbelievable. I'm asked to care about everything. On Facebook, which I haven't been on in over a year, thank you, I know. It's quite an achievement, and I'm very proud of myself, Zuckerberg, Gutenberg, whatever the hell your name is. I have like 3,000 friends. And I don't give a shit about any of them. Okay, here's what it sounds like when you don't start a show. Here's what it sounds like when you do.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
I know, they know that already.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Do you care? I don't think you do. I ran into a case of verbal diarrhea yesterday, and it has nothing to do with the food that you eat. Verbal diarrhea is a person that just runs at the mouth, just literally, just doesn't shut up. And you didn't even click on him. I mean, you went up to them. It was a guy. He was an attorney. He is an attorney. He was when I tell you this story. He is still. He's an attorney. And, you know, attorneys are great. They're very important. They sue people. I mean, it's very important to be an attorney to defend somebody who is wrongly accused, just like in the movie The Fugitive. Oh, wow. That's all that movie was good for, wrongfully accused. I don't know. Courtroom dramas, wrongfully accused. I didn't do it. Why are you getting me involved? So I ran into this attorney. And I said, hi, how are you? And he said, Ron, how have you been? I haven't talked to you in years. And I said, yeah, I know. I don't know why we don't talk. And then I remembered the guy won't shut up. He just won't freaking shut up. He goes on and on, assuming that everything that he says is of great paramount interest to me. And none of it is. I can live without knowing what happened to him since I last saw him. He's going on and on about his son going to college. I don't even know his son. I didn't even know he had a son. And he goes on and on. My son is this. Let me tell you, my son, we moved him up there. And when we moved him up there, I got out of the car. I put one foot out of the car first, then the second foot. And then I walked in a walking manner, not too fast, not too slow. I didn't clock how fast I was walking, but I think it was pretty fast. But I wasn't excited about doing this. So I get out of the car. Then I close the car door. It didn't close all the way. I had to close it a little bit more. So I pushed it a little harder. There's something wrong with my car door, I realized. When I get back from moving my son up to college, I'm going to get my door looked at. There's a great little auto body place. It's just down the street from me. I think it was about 5 years ago when I honked the horn. It was just a very measly little honk, and I thought there's something wrong with my battery, so I brought it into this place, and they looked at it. The guy's name was Joe. Joe has his own family. He's got his own problems. I'll tell you about them in just a second. Oh, my God, shut up. What are you? And so I started walking backwards like Michael Jackson's moonwalk. But it didn't help. He moonwalked forward toward me. He knew the moonwalk as well. He just wouldn't shut up. I couldn't get out of his orbit. I could not. He was pulling me in with his gravitational pull, and I wanted so much to release myself. I couldn't stand it. He was filling me up with negative, horrible thoughts about killing him. He just wouldn't stop. And I kept saying, I looked at my watch continually saying, well, I really have to go. I don't even wear a watch. I don't even have a watch on my wrist, but I kept looking at my wrist as if I did, thinking that, well, here's an attorney. He's stupid. He won't know what I'm talking about. But he did know. And he said, Ron, you don't even have a wristwatch, which reminds me of a funny story. I had a wristwatch and I lost it in Hawaii, and my wife lost her purse. That was you on the news? I can't believe it. It's awful. It's just awful to be stuck with somebody and you just can't leave. They just keep talking and talking, and they never get you involved in the conversation. They just talk at you so they can hear themselves talk. They never say, Ron, what do you think of that? Or Ron, did that ever happen to you? No, don't include me in your stupid little, they never include you. It's not a conversation. It's a TED talk. That's what it is. It's a TED talk from a guy who's not even named Ted, and it's disgusting. And it's got to stop. And I think there should be some way of, but I can't. I can't stop it. I can't stop it. It just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. That would be a scary movie. The man who never stopped talking. There was no way to stop him. Everybody in his perimeter just dropped to the floor in agony. Shut up, please. Please stop talking. You've got to stop talking. This is killing people. Shut up.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Everybody, please just gain your composure. So this attorney, I have not had jury duty in, I'd say, 4 years now, which is a record. I get called for jury duty every 3 years like clockwork, like there's a clock on my wrist every 3 years. And the jury people, they keep saying to me, in the state in which I live, they keep saying, it's all random. It's all random. We don't know who you mean. You may get called and you may not. It's all random. It's not random. You call me every 3 years in August. But this year they didn't call me. And my reaction was, as much as I can't stand jury duty, it's the worst thing of all. when they didn't call me this year and send me a notice in the mail, my reaction was, what the fuck's wrong with me? How come you're not calling me? What, my opinion isn't good enough? I mean, Ron, just stop it, Ron. Choose your side and just be quiet. Just shut up. I will not do jury duty. I refuse. I just refuse. And it goes along the lines of what I'm talking about. Some guy does something wrong, hurts another person. And it's usually a guy. Hurts another person, does a child molestation. You don't molest children. Why would you? Why would you find children to be a sexual turn-on? What's wrong with you? Exactly. Exactly. Or there's an act of love, of murder, you know, like, oh, he's sleeping around with my wife, and so I killed him. You know, I wouldn't have killed him otherwise. It was a crime of passion. It was a crime of passion. Okay, I don't care about any of that stuff unless it happens to me. Other than that, why are you getting me involved in somebody else? Why are you putting me in a courtroom with a murderer or a child molester? Why am I seated in a room with them on purpose? I don't want to be near them. I don't want to be in the same building as these people. You can't make me. You can't make me. Well, they can. They give you a summons, a subpoena to appear in court as a juror. And Trump doesn't show up for anything. He denies subpoenas. He can go to court because he's above the law. You see, he's above the law. I'm not. If I didn't show up for jury duty, I would be fined and could be arrested. That's just to go to the courthouse to sit in a chair and listen to somebody else's problems and decide whether I think that's bad or not. I haven't even been indicted. Trump has been, and he chooses to ignore the subpoena. Well, I'm the president. I don't have to go. Well, I'm the citizen. I don't have to go either. Somebody's above the law. Guess which one? But that's not the point of my little TED talk here. I refuse to do jury duty. And I've gone through the scenario in my head. If I'm ever called for jury duty again, I'm going to show up and I'm going to create havoc. I am. I'm going to sit there, I'm going to go to the judge, and I'm going to say, look, stop giving me other people's problems. Well, Ron, it's your civic duty as a citizen of the United States to participate in our legal system. Oh, is it? Oh, is it really? You can't make me. You can't make me. I'm going to decide the fate of somebody else? Who the hell do you think I am? I'll tell you something. If I were ever put on a jury, and I know this sounds very anti-American, if I were ever put on a jury to decide somebody else's fate, I would just sit there and I would put my hands over my ears and stick my tongue out and go, they'd kick me off. Or I just do what I usually do. Just be myself. I'm a very gassy person. I could control it or not. I may choose, if I'm sitting on a jury, not to control my gas. That would be one hell of a trial. And what, they can't blame it on me. I mean, that's a natural body function of releasing gas. I have a way of making it really, really nasty. I can control this stuff. I can turn on the special odor classification and make sure the rest of the jury clears out. I could make the guy who's on trial cry. All right, I did it. I did it. Just tell juror number 5 to stop farting. Okay, I did it. I murdered her. I did it. Just please get that juror number 5 out of the courtroom. He's watering my eyes. I can't breathe. Yeah, I'll be out of that room before you know it. The bailiff will even drive me home just to get me out of the county. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. I'm not. I got a lot of tricks up my sleeve. Asking me to get involved with nasty people, to sit in a room with them, and then to have interaction and decide their fate. What are you, crazy? Who, me? There's plenty of people in the country that just love to be jurors. You know, if you're going to have a military, an all-volunteer military, and you don't have a draft system, the only reason you would have a draft military is because you don't have enough people in the military to take care of business, so you have to draft people because you don't have enough. That's not the case with the jury system. That's not the case at all. There's plenty of people that love to be jurors. They watch all those shows on television. They get a little rise out of it. Perhaps an orgasm, I don't know. But they love the courtroom drama. They got nothing else to do. They're on disability. Give them something to do. Sit on a jury. I mean, God. Serious. That or watch television. I mean, you might as well be in a real courtroom with other schmucks. See, that's what I think it is. I think a courthouse is full of people that are been accused of things, and they're full of jurors who get involved. I don't. Why are you involving me? I don't want to be there. Do you get that? Do you get that? There's nothing on the juror form that says thank you for being for coming to the courthouse because you were summoned. And if you wouldn't, I would arrest you or fine you. So thanks for being here. Thanks for doing your civic duty to avoid jail. But there's no box that says, check here if you actually want to be here. I mean, why don't you just get people to go to your stupid jury duty who want to go to stupid jury duty? Don't, Ron, it's not stupid. It's not stupid. It's not stupid at all. Okay, maybe it's not stupid, but it's stupid if you call me to do it. That's stupid. That's just plain stupid. That's making a really bad choice. You are stupid if you think that I want to be there. I don't. I don't want to be there. I don't like to be confined. That's pretty much what it is, too. I don't like it when somebody I don't know or a country that is screwing me every day anyway says to me, you have to be here. You don't have a choice and you can't leave until I tell you. That's called a 9-to-5 job. That's confining, too. I never liked those things. I was never into the 9-to-5 job thing. Because 9-to-5 jobs aren't 9-to-5. They're 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock or 8:30 to 5:30. You don't get paid for lunch half the time. 9-to-5. Who came up with that? Your hours are off. What is that, daylight savings time plus 2 hours? What are you talking about? Where'd you get the 9-to-5 thing? Do you know where? You know what it is? In New York City, jobs are actually 9-to-5. They start at 9 o'clock in the morning. They end at 5 o'clock in the evening. They're actually 9-to-5. It's the only place on the planet that people work 9-to-5. Every other place, the hours are not 9-to-5. They're earlier and later. 9-to-5 is just a guesstimate. You know, what are the hours of this job? 9-to-5. I don't know. Six to 5:30. Whatever. All right. We have a very interesting guest on today's program. That's not going to happen unless I just stop talking again. again. Thanks for hanging on here. You're really wonderful. I need to compliment you every once in a while because I think you just want to hear my voice. I don't think you're really listening to what I'm saying. I just think you want to hear my voice because of my dulcet, sexy tones.
Okay, Ron Van Dam may not be the prettiest face in radio.
What?
But come on, that voice, am I right? You are listening to Ron Van Dam, the sexiest voice in podcasting, on New England Broadcasting.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling me a sexy voice, but you can't go to bed with a voice. So, you know.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful. Stephen Kotler joins us now. He is the co-author of a book called The Future is Faster Than You Think. Now, that's pretty fast. I kind of get that. What made you go for this subject matter?
Well, this is, I think it's my fifth or sixth book on technology. And all the previous ones were looking at individual lines of accelerating technology. What's changed today is that these individual technologies are starting to converge. And when you get converging, accelerating technologies, like the intersection of artificial intelligence and robotics, on their own, each were powerful technologies. You put them together, and suddenly a significant portion of the U.S. workforce is concerned about technological unemployment. So you get this whole is much greater than the sum of its parts effect.
Yeah. Where do we stand? Things are moving faster than we think. Hey, that's a good name for a book, huh?
it sure is.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Are we indeed catching up to where we seem to be going?
That's a tricky question.
Yeah.
What it looks like, and if you look at the data and you look at the math, looks like we're going to experience about 100 years worth of technological change over the next decade. So if you think back to 1920, roll us forward to today, that's what we're looking at over the next 10 years. And, you know, the book was written not to scare people about the future, but get people really excited and prepared for what's coming, because it's amazing.
Industry usually catches up pretty good, because when there is money to be made through technological advances, they put everything they can into keeping up and making sure you're competitive. Is this almost too fast for industry?
Yeah, that seems to be, it's not almost too fast for industry. For certain, for entrepreneurs, for very nimble organizations, companies, this is fantastic, right? There's so much opportunity. We think there's more wealth is going to be created over the next kind of 100 years than it has, or next 10 years than it has over the previous 100. That said, for legacy organizations, for established companies, they're built for safety and stability. They're not designed for times of rapid change. So we're definitely going to be in for a disruptive decade, that's for sure.
Now, disruptive can also be dangerous. And not only do we not have a workforce that is capable of advancing at the same pace, but I'm constantly concerned about security on these technological advances, because as wonderful as they can be in every category, they can also be sabotaged and create some incredible disruption and destruction. And that's the part that scares me, that we're not catching up with.
Well, it's an interesting question, right? You're definitely asking the right questions. And there are, with all these technologies, of course there are concerns. Now, what I'm about to talk about is a double-edged sword, but we are moving towards a trillion sensor economy. By 2030, it could be 100 trillion sensors. That means the ability to kind of know anything, anywhere, what's going on. So our capability of kind of staying on top of the threats that are heading our way is massively expanding. But the threats that are heading our way are also massively expanding. So definitely a double-edged sword there.
Yeah. Education-wise, it seems like everything's changing in the schools anyway. But education-wise, where do we stand as far as a nation is concerned? Are there other countries that are indeed facing up to this in an efficient manner?
I don't know if any countries are facing up to this in an efficient manner. Certainly education is one of those industries, we could call it, I guess, institutions that it's horribly designed. It was designed almost two centuries ago, mostly to batch process children for jobs in an industrial society. We don't live in that society anymore. We know our education system is massively strained in this country. Globally, there's 321 million kids without an education. That said, what's coming, virtual reality, AI, the where they come together, we're looking at really amazing educational possibilities. VR gives us the ability to create a fully distributed educational platform, meaning if you have a headset, you can go to school. And then it's suddenly not the problem, can we scale up teachers, can we stay up schools, which is really impossible. Suddenly it's, can we develop a software-based educational system that is really top flight, and that we're good at. So I think education is a place where, yes, a lot of disruption is coming, but for the kids who are on the receiving end of the education, I think they're not going to be in any trouble.
There are certain inventions and technologies that seem to spark everything else, like a tree with a strong trunk and then many branches coming out of it that seed their own trees, such as television, computers, etc. They spark other things that make things grow faster. Is there anything that's in our near future that is that tree trunk of technology that's going to spark tons of different things?
Yeah, for sure. Good point. One of the things I look at when I look at that, I think about what's coming in terms of ubiquitous global networks. Mm-hmm. We're seeing 5G rolling out right now, on the streets. We've got Project Loon, which is Google's balloons in the stratosphere. And then above that, we've got a bunch of different satellite constellations that are going up that are going to bring ubiquitous global internet connectivity to everyone. So we've got 4.38 billion people online right now. Mm-hmm. The next 5 years, that's going to double, right? The entire globe is about to join the conversation. And I think that is an incredibly fruitful tree, to use your metaphor.
Interesting. Do you think we're at a point where, I mean, excuse me if I get too technical here or we're too social. Is there a point where technology controls our lives and our social development, or does our social development demand certain technologies?
It's an interesting question. It's a broad question. I'll narrow it down a little bit.
All right.
One of the things we're learning, this is work done at Stanford in virtual reality, for example, like social issues. Right now, one of the problems with our schools, we're not teaching our kids empathy. We're not teaching them kind of foundational emotional intelligence skills, all kinds of stuff. One of the things we've learned, and this is Jeremy Bellison's work at Stanford, virtual reality is phenomenal at training up empathy and some of these other more difficult social emotions.
Yeah.
So, yes, there may be a downside, but we're seeing a lot more ability to train creativity, empathy. A lot of the things we couldn't get at in the 20th century, we seem to be able to get at in the 21st. Mm. Gives me a lot of hope.
May I ask your age?
53.
Okay. Does it... It's very difficult for anybody over 50, let's say, to totally accept this unless you're in the field that you're in and write about what you write about. But most Americans that are getting into the senior area are kind of still holding on with white knuckles to what they had. Do you understand what I mean by that? Where is
I absolutely I absolutely understand. I mean, so look, we have a standard cognitive bias, right, built in human brains called loss aversion. This is an idea that whatever you have right now, if I remove it, replace it, whatever comes next to replace it is going to be worse. This is a built-in cognitive bias. It's a basic feature of being human.
It's
not
right?
Just the elder. It's all of us, and certainly that's true, but, you know, my mom, who's in her 80s, loves Facebook. You know, and it took her a long time to get there, but when she got there, she's thrilled. So I think we see a lot of that as well.
All right, okay. Yeah, cell phones is a good example of that, too. that's actually beneficial to that age group. The book is fascinating, and we're just touching upon certain aspects of it. It's called The Future is Faster Than You Think, and it actually gets into what could be down the road and how we handle it. It's Peter, what's the pronunciation of Peter?
Diamandis.
Okay, very good. And Stephen, who we're talking to, they're best-selling authors, and they've put it together in this book. It's available everywhere, I assume.
It is available everywhere, and you can find it at futurefasterbook.com. We're running a kind of a great pre-order campaign to the end of the month with lots of cool bonuses, so you can check it out there.
Very cool. Well, thanks for keeping us up on what we see happening, but we don't quite understand what's happening, and this kind of puts it all together for us. Thank you so much for your time today. Is there a website where you can be followed?
StephenKotler.com.
All right, that's KOTLER. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, that was interesting. That was an interesting situation that we just heard. Well, I'm out of time for today. I'm going to be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. This is going to be fantastic tomorrow. You thought today's show was interesting? Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. Forget the premise then. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Thanks for being here. Please join me then. Until that time, I wish you peace.